You're listening to Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner. On this episode, we talk to martial artist, actor, stuntman, and action movie aficionado, also a damn good Brit kicker, Darren Shalavi. This interview first appeared on Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid Commentaries podcast. The other voice you'll hear will be Dr. Action himself, Mr. Paul Croson. Educated listener might not recognize our next guest at first glance, but I guarantee you've all seen a film he's been involved in. Like his fellow Brit kicker Gary Daniels, it was the films of Bruce Lee that inspired him as young as seven to start his martial arts training. Just 12 short years later, he would begin his career as an actor and stuntman in Hong Kong action films, before transitioning to America in the mid-90s, where among other things, he would play the villain opposite Gary Daniels in a favorite film of the show, Blood Moon. From there, stunts, martial arts, and acting would have him working on everything from I Spy, 300, and Watchmen to working with former trainer Donnie Yen in Ip Man 2, opposite the one and only Steven Seagal in Born to Raise Hell, and with Steve Austin in recent action hits Tactical Force and The Package. Dr. Action joins me, the Kick-Ass Kid, in welcoming to the show the one and only Darren Shalavi. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
Nice intro. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you for coming on the show, Mr. Shalavi.
Thanks for asking me, man.
As the kid said in the introduction, you started training at an early age. What style did you study and how did that lead you to eventually get to Hong Kong?
Well, I started off doing judo because my brother went with my dad and I was about 7 years old. My brother was about, he was like five and a half. When we were kids, you know, we were little tiny kids, you know, we did judo with my dad and I think it was a very good discipline to start off doing because, you know, you get used to being close quarters and, you know, learning how to tumble and fall and all that kind of stuff and throw people. And, you know, I did judo in what was the drama theater like a kind of a drama hall. We would go in and do judo after the actors had finished performing. And sometimes, you know, we'd get there and they'd be finishing their show. So, you know, we'd be there waiting to start our judo class and there was all these actors, you know, doing their thing. And so I'm there waiting for the judo class to start and I'm watching all these actors performing. And then when they finished, we could go in and we could start doing our judo and our martial arts. So that sort of got me interested really in martial arts and acting right at the same time when I was just a kid. This is before I even knew of Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, all those guys. And, you know, I saw the first martial arts movie I saw, I was with my family on a holiday in Greece. And we were staying in this hotel, and it was close to an outdoor movie theater. And we could see the screen from the hotel, and it was playing what I thought was Bruce Lee, but it ended up being the big brawl, Battle Creek Brawl with Jackie Chan. Yeah. And I thought this guy was Bruce Lee. And I'd heard all these kind of stories about Bruce Lee, and I thought, wow, this Bruce Lee guy's really good, you know? But it turned out that it was Jackie. And then, so actually, really, the Big Brawl was the first sort of martial arts movie that I'd seen. And then I saw Bruce Lee and I was like, wow, you know, because I mean, Jackie, you know, he's the comedy and everything is so wonderful. But then I saw Bruce Lee and I was like, wow, this is a hell of a lot different. And I sort of developed this fascination to one day go over to Hong Kong and work with these guys and learn from those guys. And it was just my dream as a kid to play a bad guy in kung fu movies.
So it was your goal to be a bad guy then?
Well, yeah. I mean, I wanted to be in kung fu movies, and I, you know, but at an early age, I kind of realized that I'm not going to star in a kung fu movie. So I should, you know. So I wanted to be Huang Zhang Li, you know.
Yeah. Cool.
And then, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, at such a young age, you don't think about building a career and, you know, transitioning to playing a good guy in a lead and becoming an actor. I didn't even, you know, I didn't even really think about sort of trying to progress and learn how to act or anything. It was just more about learning how to kick, and then I thought I'd be able to be in films.
And so you go to Hong Kong. How do you first get into the movie business out there? What was the process? Or was it just through meeting Donnie Yen when he was training?
No, you know what happened was when I was like 15 years old, I was always reading those magazines like Combat Magazine and Bay Logan was always the guy. You know, every time I read an article or an interview, it was Bay Logan this, Bay Logan that. And I'm like, all right, well, I suppose, you know, this is probably somebody I should try to contact. And I was just a kid, man. And I called, they had a number in the magazine, and I called up Combat Magazine and I called up and I said, I'm trying to reach, this is Darren Shalabi, I'm trying to reach Bay Logan. And the lady on the other end of the line in Birmingham said, oh, I'm sorry, he's not working here anymore at the magazine. I said, oh, geez, that's a real shame because I have some uncut Bruce Lee footage that nobody's ever seen before. And I know that Bay would really like to see it, and I've really got to get a hold of him. This is the true story, I swear to God. And she goes, oh, what do I do? I'll give you his mobile phone number. And I thought, wow, he's got a mobile phone? I mean, you got to remember, this is like 1988 or something, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, right. And she gave me his phone number, and I thought, wow, I totally did Axel Foley, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I called him up, and just out of the blue, and I'm 15 years old, and I said, hi, Mr. Logan, I'm Darren Shalabi, and I'm going to be an action star, you know? And he says to me, so how old are you? And I said, I'm 15. And he said, do you shave yet? And I said, I'm working on it. And he goes, are you good looking? I said, yeah, the girls think so. And he goes, all right, send me some pictures and I'll give you my honest opinion. So I sent him some pictures to his office in Birmingham. And he called me back and he said, you know, you're a bit young, obviously, but, you know, you've got some good kicks or whatever. And let's keep in touch. And he ended up with Rick Baker and those guys doing that seminar with Donnie Yen. I think it was 1989. And he called me up and he said, you know, we're doing this seminar with Donnie Yen. And he said to me, he said, come down, you don't have to pay. Meet me and all these guys and meet Donnie Yen. And I did. And I went down there from Manchester and I took that seminar and I met Donnie Yen. And to me, Donnie was kind of a mix between Bruce and Jackie. I mean, I always wanted to kick, and Donnie has great kicks and this great physique. And I was like, wow, yeah. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm going to be in a movie with this guy one day.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was, I really appreciate Bay. You know, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I mean, he gave me that chance at the very beginning and then introduced me to Mark Houghton, who he was partners with at the time. And they had this movie called The Last Shaolin. Bay calls me up and he says, are you sitting down? And I said, hold on a second, I will do. And he says, Mark and I have this movie that we're going to produce in Malaysia, and you're going to be the star of it. It's called The Last Shaolin. And so, you know, borrow the money from your dad, get out to Malaysia, and we're going to make this kick-ass martial arts movie, and you're going to be starring in a film. So I went up to Malaysia thinking I was going to be, you know, coming back as like a movie star, you know, whatever, you know, like starring in a film, you know. And I got there and there was no money and nothing happened. But, you know, I mean, Bay is a, you know, one of these guys that he's got an incredible mind and he's, you know, he's a real go-getter and all that kind of stuff. And he has been since I first met him 25 years ago, you know. But, you know, I thought that I was going to be going out to Malaysia and starring in a movie. And, you know, unfortunately, the movie didn't happen. But thankfully, Mark Houghton sort of, you know, let me stay there and work for him, you know. And he taught me a lot about fight choreography. And I learned some Cantonese from him and a lot of stuff. And, you know, I did a couple of TV movies that he was the fight choreographer on. And, you know, I left. But, I mean, I wanted to go to Hong Kong. My best friend there, Joaz Olavia, we actually met at that Donnie Yen seminar. The funny thing is that, you know, they started having everybody partner up at the seminar with Donnie Yen. Okay, everybody find a partner. And everybody sort of got together with their friends that they were with at the seminar. And across the room, I could see this one dorky-looking guy. And I'm like, oh, please, come on. And he started walking towards me, and I'm kind of backing away. He's like, oh, should we partner up? And I was like, okay. So we partnered up to do some of the choreography and stuff like that. And then we started getting along really, really well. And he said, you know, we had the same love of movies and stuff. And he said, oh, I'll send you some movies. You know, we've talked about films and films that I didn't have and stuff. And, you know, on video cassette. I mean, certainly Paul knows how, you guys know how hard it was, you know, 20, 25 years ago to get to martial arts movies. You know, you go down to London and spend, you know, £30, you know, for a rip-off copy.
Sure.
So he sent me a bunch of movies. And I was, wow, this guy's nice, sending me a load of videotapes. And we became like best friends, and he moved to Hong Kong, and then I moved to Hong Kong as well and stayed with him. And then I just sent all my stuff out to all the companies, got a list of all the film companies, sent everything out, some pictures, And I got a phone call from Yuen Woo-ping's producer, Anthony Wong, and he said, you know, we'd like you to come in and meet with Yuen Woo-ping. And I was working as a doorman at the time. Met Yuen Woo-ping, asked me to throw a couple of kicks, and, you know, I just put on my bad guy face, and they hired me for that movie Tai Chi Boxer, Tai Chi 2, with Wu Jing. It was originally going to be with Jet Li, but I think Jet Li was going off to do Lethal Weapon 4.
Right.
So they hired me on that, and then when that movie, I went off to China and shot that movie for 2 months in Hangzhou, and I was back in Hong Kong, and, you know, they turned them around really quickly. So the movie came out in the theaters, and I'd sent my stuff to Keith Strandberg and M.C. Yun from Seasonal Films, because, you know, No Retreat, No Surrender is really right there in the top five of my all-time favorites. And,
nice.
You know, I really wanted to work on a seasonal film. I thought, you know, if I could play the bad guy in, you know, like a No Retreat, No Surrender type movie, I would love that. And I got a phone call at midnight from Tony Leung, Leung Siu Hung, and he was the director of Blood Moon, and he said he just came out of watching Tai Chi 2 at the movie theater and want to come in the next day and meet with him and Ang Ji. So I went in the next day. They told me they're doing a movie in America with Gary Daniels, and I'm like, whoa! And they're like, yeah, we want you to be the bad guy. So they screened Super Fights for me, and they showed me some pictures of the sets they were building and locations, and I said, great. And Ang Ji handed me a wad of cash as a deposit, and yeah, I walked away like I'd robbed a bank. I couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
So that was it, you know. I mean, and you know, Gary Daniels, I mean, I was a big fan of his, you know. And to just, you know, to be told, yeah, you're going to be the bad guy in a movie with Gary Daniels on a seasonal film production, I was like, yes, this is it.
That's fantastic. Well, it's definitely one of our favorite films. In fact, I think you've just answered the next question I have, which is all about sort of how Blood Moon came about and whether you were aware of Gary Daniels and so on. What was it like to work with him? What's he like as a guy and a star opposite him and stuff?
Well, I'd actually, the funny thing is, he didn't realize this, but I'd actually met him before at Bay Logan's house. Like, you know, years earlier, he came over for the Clash of the Titans in Birmingham.
Nice.
And I was hanging out with Bay. You know, I think Bay called me up and said, you know, come up and come down to Birmingham and you can hang out with us and meet Gary Daniels. And, you know, I went down there, and I remember being at Bay's house, and Bay was cooking breakfast, and I remember watching Gary Daniels eat sausages and eggs, egg yolk. And I thought, wow, this guy, how does this guy have a physique like this eating this kind of shit food? And we went to the Clash of the Titans, and I remember Gary had borrowed his mum's car. I just remember it was this little red car, yeah. And I was driving my dad's car, and I nearly crashed into the back of him on the way. So on Blood Moon, I said to him, I told him this story, and I said, I was the guy that made your Bay's house that nearly crashed into the back of your mum's car.
So I just love the idea of Gary Daniels driving around in his mum's car.
Gary's back in his mum's car, I'm driving my dad's car, and I nearly crashed into the back of him. That's a great way to make a first impression. So so that was it. And, you know, met him when we started shooting in North Carolina. And Gary's amazing because, you know, we both sort of grew up the same way with his fascination of the East and Bruce Lee and Jackie and all that kind of stuff and wanting to do these movies and being involved with martial arts. So we got along just, you know, absolutely fantastic. Same with Chuck Jeffries, you know, I mean, Chuck is just such an amazing guy, you know, down to earth, funny, you know, just a really, really warm person. So yeah. that movie Blood Moon for me as my first, let's say, American film, you know, or, you know, I mean, I was concerned about doing Blood Moon because, you know, when you shoot in Hong Kong, we don't shoot with live sound. It's all, there's no sound, right? Because, you know, Hong Kong has always been so loud and noisy with the airport being there, Kai Tak Airport, the old airport. So they never shot with in sync sound. So I was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do a movie now and use my own voice? Plus playing an American as well, right?
Yeah.
But, they hired this guy called Alan Weeks that was in a lot of the sort of blaxploitation movies. And he was my acting coach for a couple of weeks before we started. And it was good. It was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah, it's a great film. Like I said, it is one of our favorites. And sort of every little aspect to it, from him doing the magic tricks and stuff, there's just lots of stuff in it that's...
Well, it's aged, hasn't it, really? We should really do a remake. Or, you know,
I don't think so. I think it's the fight scenes in it are fantastic. But,
well, it's, you know, I didn't even know what the internet was, you know, so here I am playing this killer that sets up video cameras and doing something with a phone to send this image. I'm like, what the hell is this? How does this work? Do it now, you know, we could, this could kind of be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy how, because it was quite early in the sort of years of the internet. It was done in, what, 96, was it? 97?
96. Yeah. 96.
So, I mean, I only just remember email in 96 coming about. So the fact that he had, you know, a little video camera and the fact he was doing all this stuff through the internet, it was quite sort of forward thinking in its own.
It was. But I mean, I thought, this is ridiculous. What kind of a movie are we making here? It's a science fiction film.
It's going to have a catch on. As I said, did you do a lot of the action, the fight choreography on that? Did you do the fight choreography on that?
No, Tony Leung, who actually went on to be Sammo Hung's assistant on and co-fight choreographer on Ip Man, the first Ip Man. So it was Tony Leung and his brother, and he brought a team over from Hong Kong.
And our action sets, one of the things I was going to ask is, action sets usually, are they fun places, or is it lots of hard work and discipline? And
well, when I'm working for Hong Kong action directors, it's more like being in a dojo, you know? I mean, you have that respect for them, and you don't, I don't, you know, I never really had much in the way of opinions when it came to what I'd like to do, or this or that, the other, you know. It's, you just trust that, you know, they're Hong Kong action directors, and you know they're going to make you look good. I mean, I just finished a movie for Yuen Woo-ping. And again, another sort of hero of mine, you know, with The Drunken Master and all the movies that he did. So, you know, and I'd seen the movie, so I knew that, like, I knew that they know how to make you look good. And I grew up watching Hong Kong movies. So it's fun, but it's hard work, because you don't want to let anybody down, you know. And they shoot so fast that it's constant, boom, 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 boom. So you're just working really hard. And it's a great way to start your career, because, you know, once you start doing movies in America and all this stuff, it's, you know, it's a lot slower here. And yeah, it's fun, because, you know, you're living your dream working in a kung fu movie or martial arts movies, but, you know, you work your ass off, you know?
Yeah, of course.
You don't want to let anybody down. You want to give them your best. So you've got to be on all the time. It's constantly, I mean, you know, when I did Ip Man 2, it was basically, you know, I was going for, you know, running in the morning, shooting 15 hours straight, come back, lifting weights, you know, get 4 hours sleep and repeat, you know, for like a month.
Wow.
You know, just got to be on, you know, you're working there for Sammo Hung and with Donnie Yen, Wilson Yip, and you're like, this is the pinnacle of what I wanted to do as far as working in an Asian film. So, you know, you've just got to give your best.
Definitely.
So after Blood Moon, over the next few years, you got to work with, you know, quite a few action stars like Olivia Gruner, David Carradine, Matthias Hughes, and, you know, recently Steve Austin, Dolph Lundgren. What's the community like on the those sort of films? Is there much of a community?
Because they've all worked with each other over the years, so, you know, do they all know each other? And you know, do you feel like you've been embraced by that with the amount of work you've done with these guys? Or?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is interesting, yeah, because, I mean, you know, some of the guys, they're not fans of the, you know, kung fu movies and or whatever, but we all certainly sort of know each other, you know. It's kind of weird. I mean, I had a lot of fun with Olivia Gruner. You know, we did that movie G.O.D. in Canada, and that was the one that David Carradine was on, and he was a lot of fun too. You know, and you work with people like him, Mark Dacascos. I worked with him on Jesse Johnson's movie Alien Agent.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole time I was working with Mark, you know, I was throwing out lines from the movie Drive. You know, time to come home, Toby. You know, and stuff. You know, so I had a lot of fun with him. Because, you know, you watch their movies and you get the chance to work with people that you really are fans of, you know. So it's not like just meeting, you know, Steve Austin or Steven Seagal or any of these guys and getting a chance to have a picture with them or an autograph or ask them questions or, you know, sort of, you know, like you guys, you'd interview them or whatever it is. You get the chance to just actually work with them and hang out, just shoot the shit as guys, you know. I mean, Steve Austin's like, you know, come in my trailer, let's chat about acting and all this kind of stuff. And it's great, you know. It puts you on a different level and you get a different perspective. You know, I wouldn't say these guys are all my friends, you know, but, you know, certainly it's great working with people like that, that you sort of, certainly the guys that you grew up, you know, having their posters on your wall and everything.
Right, definitely. And also noticed, looking through your filmography and stuff, and in fact, I just sat through In the Name of the King the other night, that you worked...
Oh, you did, really?
Yes, I did. But you worked several films, actually, with Overbolt as actor and stuntman and things like that. How did that collaboration come about?
Well, it came about because I did a couple of pictures in Germany for a director called Olaf Ittenbach. Okay. And actually, Matthias Hughes, I did a picture called Hostile Environment with Matthias and Bridget Nielsen. Mm-hmm. And Matthias and I, we got along really, really well. We met like the year before at MIFED, the film market in Milan, where Blood Moon was screening. And he wanted to work with me, and he introduced me to the people over there in Germany. And I did this film, Legion of the Dead, and then another one called Beyond the Limits for Olaf. And Uwe was familiar with those films that I'd done, so he actually brought me in to read for a part on House of the Dead. And they hired somebody else, but he wanted to work with me, so he gave me a role in Alone in the Dark. But the role ended up getting cut really short. You know, I was supposed to have a nice fight scene with Christian Slater, but Stephen Dorff apparently wanted to be like the movie and wanted to be in it a little bit more, and they put him in a different scene, so they didn't have time to shoot my fight scene with Slater. So I did that one, and then what was the other one? Blood Rain. Yeah, he put me in that. He's like, you know, you'll be, you know, in all these scenes with Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, he works with great actors, and yeah.
And then there was In the Name of the King, and I went in and I read for the part that Brian White got. And it was, Uwe said to me, he said, look, you know, for this movie, it's a big movie with a big budget, and, you know, you're not a name yet, you know, and I need names. And I was disappointed, you know, he'd given me the script a couple of months earlier. I was playing poker with Will Sanderson, and he was around, and he gave me the script, and he says, got a great role in here for you. And then he ended up saying, well, you know, I can't really use you because you're not a name yet. And so they hired somebody else, and I was disappointed. But, you know, I mean, he got, like, what, 10 names in that movie, and I think it made about $2.8 million opening weekend. So
yeah.
That's what you get, you know. But the great thing was that Dean Cho, the stunt coordinator, Canadian stunt coordinator, Dean Che, he was on the picture, and then they had Tony Ching Siu Dong, doing the second unit, and as the film's fight choreographer, second unit director, and he knew me because of Tai Chi 2, the Yuen Lo Peng film. And Dean actually said to me, look, if Uwe's not going to use you, I will, you know, so I want to get you on the. Uwe ended up giving me this small part, just a little throwaway part.
Yeah, like I saw that, yeah.
You know, yeah, talking with Burt Reynolds. And then they ended up getting me to come in and be Ray Liotta's stunt double. So that end fight scene with Jason Statham was basically me with Statham doing the end fight. And then Ray came in for his close-ups and stuff. And the whole time I was thinking, damn, I want to do a movie with Jason Statham where I'm the bad guy. Yeah, it's one of the things.
Yes.
Like, oh, here I am doing stunts, you know. But, I mean, it was good. It was good fun. Statham was great. And, you know, I enjoyed working on the movie.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously you've got to work with Gary Daniels and you've got to work with Jason Statham. I mean, I suppose you and Scott Atkins have got to do something next to keep the Brit group together.
We have. We did a TV show, French TV series called Metal Hurlant. It's not released here or in England yet. And we did an episode called The King's Crown. It's me, Scott Atkins, Michael Jai White, Matt Mullins.
Oh, wow.
And I think in a couple of weeks I'm going back. We're going to do season 2 in Romania.
Oh, nice. So do you have any information as to when that's going to be available out here? That sounds amazing.
No, you can. It's Metal Hurlant, which is the translated is heavy metal. You know,
right.
You know those graphic novels, heavy metal. You know, with all those gorgeous babes on the front cover.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's all that kind of stuff. So this French director Guillaume Lebrano, he acquired the rights, and we did the TV series of it. So yeah, look out for it. You know, me and Scott, Michael Jai White.
Nice,
and been really good.
And do you Brit guys, like, when you're on film, do you ever have this idea about, because we would love it as action fans to see maybe the four of you together, or like expand it and have like a British Expendables type thing? Is that anything that's ever been discussed?
Well, you know what? Matthias Hughes, actually, like 15 years ago, we had a meeting with this big producer in Hollywood, and we were going to do this film where they wanted, you know, Matthias and Olivia Gruner, Mark Dacascos, Don Wilson, you know, all the Daniel Bernhardt, you know, all
sure.
The Mike Dudikoff, all these guys, put them all together in a movie. And we're talking about, I'd be the bad guy because I wasn't a name. Nobody recognized me, right? But they would put all these guys together and do a film. And this was 15, 16 years ago, you know? I think the problem was it was like, well, who the hell's going to be first billing, you know, and who's going to have the bigger role? Is, you know, you've got egos. I mean, they all have these great careers back then. You know, it was logistically difficult to figure out, you know, how are we going to get all these people together at the same time? But those kind of things have been discussed for, you know, quite a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you'll certainly see me and Scott again, and hopefully, you know, I'd like to work with Gary again, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, we're big fans of all four of you, so I mean, the more films we get with some British ass kickers, the better.
Yeah.
So Ip Man 2, obviously, that was, like you were saying, sort of a peak of your experiences so far, would you say, of all the films you've worked on?
Yeah, because Ip Man 2 was a second chance for me, man. Because, you know, I kind of, you know, you push to be in these movies. And, you know, when you come from doing movies in Asia and you come over to America or whatever, I ended up marrying a girl from Canada. So, you know, I stayed there for a while. That's where I did I Spy. It was like I Spy, I think, was pretty much my first ever audition I ever did.
Yeah.
And, you know, those movies, you know, the Blood Moons, Hostile Environment, G.O.D., Cold Vengeance, all this stuff, it doesn't mean anything. You know, it doesn't mean anything to casting directors in America. You know, even on your reel, you know, I don't think I have any footage from any of those movies on my show reel now. You know, I mean, they just, nobody knows who they are or who you're working with. So it doesn't really help too much.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, sad that those movies, which, look, you know, people can sort of tongue-in-cheek talk about them and stuff now, and, you know, the internet is rife with people being, you know, ironically liking movies, but they're some of the best action movies out there to some extent, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed that Blood Moon never got a release in England. I thought, well, you know, you've got Gary Daniels as the star, me as the bad guy, you know, you've got two English guys here. I mean, I would have gone well out of my way to promote that movie or do interviews and all the martial arts magazines in England and stuff, but nobody picked it up. I think they wanted too much money for it. But yeah, I mean, you know, Ip Man 2 was you know, after I went through a divorce and all that kind of stuff, and I started having this sort of mindset where I was like, you know what, following your dream is one thing, but you really need some money in this world, you know? And so I started doing stunts for a little while. You know, I thought, all right, I'm going to quit acting, you know. Friends of mine, you know, Brad Allen and Paul Rapofsky, they called me about working on the Chronicles of Riddick. So, you know, I ended up doing that, and I worked for a week on the movie, and I made ten grand. And I'm like, this is not bad, you know. And then yeah. Chuck was working with Wesley Snipes on Blade 3, and he brought me in to do stunts on Blade 3. And then I did that thing we just talked about on In the Name of the King. And then I was hired to double Van Damme on a movie called The Hardcore, and with Sheldon Lettich.
Oh, yeah.
Was directing it. And then I got a phone call from Damon Caro, who was the stunt coordinator on 300, and he said he wanted me to work on this movie, 300. It's going to be 3 months shooting in Montreal. So I spoke with the stunt coordinator on that Van Damme movie, and he said, look, dude, if you can, you know, if you want to go and work on that, go ahead. And he let me go, and I worked on 300. And I made more money working on 300 in 3 months than I'd made in, like, 15 years as an actor.
Wow.
So then they call me to do, like, stunts on, you know, fight. When I say stunts, I mean, I don't, you know, it's fighting stuff. You know, I don't do, you know, cars, high falls, fire, horses, that kind of stuff. I mean, I never really considered myself a stunt performer, a stunt guy. But unless, you know, it's the fighting stuff. And I did the Night at the Museum movies and stuff like that. But I made enough money doing those movies that I could return to acting and be more careful with the roles that I did. I didn't want to do another, you know, stupid bit part in an Uwe Boll movie, you know? I mean, it was just, you know, and I got cut out of a couple of movies. And, you know, some movies, you get offered stuff and you think, well, this is not really going to help my career, but I need the money. So I did stunts for a while so I could have enough FU money to basically sort of pick and choose the films that I did as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully, you know, through Mike Leader and Ian Tang, his partner, they were casting the bad guy in Ip Man 2, and those guys had seen me in I Spy with Eddie Murphy playing a boxer and Tai Chi 2. And I got that part, so it was really sort of a second chance in my career. And because of Ip Man 2 and how successful it was, you know, I got all this sort of work has started to happen. So it's been a real blessing for me. I mean, look, I mean, it's kind of like coming full circle. You know, when you're a kid of, you know, 16, 17 years old, and you you're looking at Donnie Yen going, man, one day I want to do a movie with this guy. And then 20-something years later, you're playing the main bad guy in It Man 2. You know, I mean, we're all Bruce Lee fans, and all Bruce Lee fans from the very beginning, we all knew Ip Man, you know, it's Bruce Lee's master. So I knew the name Ip Man when I knew the name Bruce Lee, pretty much.
Sure.
So it was, for me, it was very, it's very cyclical, you know. It's like, wow, you know, this is taking a long time. And I remember saying to Donnie, I said, man, I wanted to work on one of your movies so much, and I wouldn't have had it any other way or in any other film, you know. It was just really, really great to be there. And of course, Sammo Hung, you know, you can't go wrong being choreographed by him.
Oh, no, of course not. And how as a martial artist, how difficult is it when playing a bad guy to kind of hold back, you know, because obviously you have this great ability, and but obviously the bad guy at the end of the movie, if it's, you know, Ip Man 2, if it's Born to Raise Hell or whatever it is, you know, you've got to lose that fight ultimately. How difficult is that?
What, to lose a fight? Well, I mean, you know, growing up wanting to play the bad guy in movies, you realize that, you know, one thing that I did, and I think this is one thing that Mark Houghton actually sort of taught me right in the very beginning, was that, look, you've got to learn how to react. You know, if you want to have a career in film business, you've got to be able to make the star of the movie look good. So, you know, it's not about being able to throw all those big fancy kicks and all that kind of stuff. When you're getting in the business and you're playing these roles, you've got to know how to react to make the star of the movie look good. So, yes, I've studied martial arts since I was a kid, but I mean, you know, it's more performance. It's all acting. It's got nothing to do with fighting. I mean, I work with a lot of actors that kind of get carried away and their adrenaline gets going and stuff. But when we do fight scenes in movies, I mean, it's all very sort of controlled, you know. It's we know what we're doing. And I think there's a sort of an ability that you get to be able to perform fight scenes. I mean, it's sort of I call it like a violent dance.
Right.
You know, but there's your job there is to, you know, keep everything safe. You know, it looks sort of chaotic and all that kind of stuff. It's organized chaos, you know, as Bruce Lee would say.
Yes.
Yeah, what are your favorite action films then that you sit down and you watch?
You know, recently, I really got into, you know, it was always the Chinese movies, the Hong Kong movies.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Then I think Wilson Yip and Donnie Yen really sort of had gotten my interest back into Hong Kong films, you know, with Dragon Tiger Gate, Flashpoint, SPL, and then, Ip Man. And then, of course, Korean cinema. You know, you look at movies like Old Boy or Crying Fist. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but Crying Fist is a really, really good film. And then, of course, Tony Jaa, and you get Thai cinema. And then, you know, Gareth Evans and The Raid, you know, and you look at what they're doing in Indonesia now, you know. It's, you know, it's unfortunately Hong Kong cinema has really taken a back seat right now. You know, you've got all these other guys, you know, in Korea, Thailand, Indonesia that are making all these movies that are sort of eclipsing what they've been doing in Hong Kong for a while. I mean, there's no up and coming sort of Hong Kong stars really to continue to carry that torch that Jackie and Sammo and Donnie and these guys had, you know.
Yeah, was something like The Raid, was, because obviously throughout, I don't know, movie criticism or the internet or whatever, The Raid sort of like a ripple kind of became the big thing over last year. Was that ripple sort of felt throughout the industry, and did people think, we've got to kind of step up now, or was it just, they're doing that thing, we're going to carry on doing our thing? Or,
well, I mean, you know, look, I mean, ask Larnell Stovall about it. He was he's the fight choreographer on Metal Hurlant, the thing that we did in Romania with me and Scott Adkins and Michael Jai White, you know, and he was the fight choreographer on Mortal Kombat. He's doing they're doing a remake of The Raid, the American version, and, you know, he takes meetings with people, and he keeps, you know, everybody keeps saying, we want to do something like The Raid. You know, right. Everybody in Hollywood now, they take that movie, The Raid. And I nearly did a movie last month, actually, this film called Extraction, that was very, very much like The Raid. You know, I mean, a movie like that does well, and it performs on so many levels, certainly, theatrically and everything, but on the festival circuit, and everybody knows about it, and, you know, then everybody in Hollywood goes, but we want to have action like the raid. You know, I mean, right. I just heard that, you know, Ninja Turtles, you know, Michael Bay, they're like, we want to have Ninja Turtles, but they're going to fight like they did in the raid. You know, so that's what happens to Hollywood. You know, some, yeah. you know, a movie sort of hits on a certain level, and then Hollywood goes, yeah, we want to do something like this. So. I've heard that many, many times. It's going to be like The Raid, you know?
I wonder why they're doing an American remake when there's not a lot of talking in the original.
Yeah, I think that what they're going to do is they're going to change it a lot. They're going to add a lot more different characters and stuff.
Sure.
From what I understand. But, I mean, look, they're remaking District 13 right now in Montreal with Paul Walker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called Brick Mansions. Yeah. It's Paul Walker and David Bell.
Okay.
So Cyril Raffaelli, unfortunately, sort of got the short end.
Is Paul Walker going to be leaping from buildings to buildings then?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That'll be interesting.
Paul Walker and David Bell, yeah. It's called Brick Mansions. They're shooting it right now. But, I mean, certain movies deserve to be remade. I mean, not like Nikita and Point of No Return. I mean, it was a stupid sort of basically a shot-by-shot remake of an incredible Luc Besson movie. It was just a piece of shit with Bridget Fonda, you know. There's no point remaking something like that. But when you're talking about The Raid, you know, I mean, Gareth Evans, you know, they're just finishing up The Raid 2 right now, and I think he's going to do a third one. But, you know, to remake something like that, I mean, it's just a very cool, simple premise. And, you know, you get the right actors and the right action in there. You know, why not remake something like that? But, are they going to remake Enter the Dragon? I keep hearing about that over the years.
Oh, yeah. I think everything in the next 10 years will be stuff we've seen before. Yeah.
We're going to have to run out of ideas, right? I mean, it's the internet and technology that sort of drives pictures and stories, too. And, you know, certainly the advancement in CG, you know, it's given opportunities for different movies like After Earth, you know.
Sure, definitely. And when we were talking earlier, you know, we mentioned Steven Seagal and you were saying, oh, great, about that. What was it like to work with him? What was it like to work with Seagal? Because, I mean, you know, you've heard a million stories about the man. So what was your personal experience with it?
Well, I honestly had a really great time working with him. I mean, it could have been better, you know. But I was actually shooting Hitman 2 when Lara Chartrand, the director, called me and said, I'm directing my first movie with Steven Seagal, and I want you to play the bad guy in it. So I was in Shanghai just finishing up Hitman 2, and I flew from Shanghai directly to Romania and started shooting on the picture. And so Steven knew that I just finished working with Donnie Yen and Sammo Hung, and he's known those guys and had a huge amount of respect for those guys for a long time. And he knows all about it, man, and he loved the first movie. So he was really respectful to me right away. I mean, he really kind of embraced me, and it was really, really awesome with me. So for me, it was a wonderful experience. He wasn't really having a great time shooting the movie. This is Born to Raise Hell. But, you know, he invited me to come into his trailer, and we had some good talks and stuff like that. And to me, it was just great to work with a man. I mean, he was brutally honest with me, you know, about how where he is in his life and his career and all this kind of stuff. And for me, it was the only thing that was unfortunate was we didn't really have any time to do that end fight scene, you know. The scheduling is a problem with these movies sometimes, you know, and that's why... on that thing I was talking about, Metal Hurling, with me and Scott Adkins for our fight, you know, I kept saying, listen, we've got to try and work it out so that we do our fight scene first up, you know, so then we get the fight scene out of the way, and then they can do the other scenes, you know. With me and Steven on Born to Raise Hell, it scheduled us to shoot the fight scene at the end of the day, which was pretty much Steven's last day working on the movie. So we didn't have any time. You know, they were shooting other sort of second-tier characters and stuff. And when it came to doing the fight with me and Steven, there was just no time. And that's an issue, you know, when you're doing these movies and you're doing an action movie, but, you know, scheduling, they don't give us any time to do the action. So Steven was a bit pissed with that, and so was I. I was like, well, you know, it's a shame. But, you know, I got a chance to work with him again. He got me on True Justice, his TV series that, again, Lara was directing, and they got me on that. Nice little fight scene in there as well. But, you know, it's just, they just shoot the fight so quick. Yeah. They don't have time. It's completely the opposite from doing movies in Hong Kong. You know, in Hong Kong, they spend a lot of time on the action and on the fight scenes. And the acting, forget about it, just run through it real quick. And it's the opposite in America. I think what it is that in Asia, the action directors have such a name and a responsibility to give the best action scenes. You know, when you hire Yuen Wo Ping or Tony Ching or Tony Leung or Sammo Hung or any of those guys, the important thing for them is to have enough time to do the action. So when people watch those movies, they're really, really impressed. You're not going to be able to hire any of those guys and not give them the amount of time that they want to do the action, because their name, their reputations and careers and their legacy depends on them, you know, delivering these really super action scenes. And there's not many people in America or American movies that you're going to hire and then they're going to have the opportunity to go, no, I need more time to do the fight scenes and the action. You know, the important, you know, the directors in Hong Kong, they're king. You know, in Asian cinema, when the director is making a movie, they run the set, they're the king of everything, you know, and they get what they want. And it's different, you know, in the studio system, Hollywood, you know, you're talking about investors and, you know, having to deliver a picture on time and on budget. They don't give a fuck, you know, they'll cut you off, you know, if you haven't, you know, you want more time to do the action and stuff? No, we don't have it in the budget. Forget about it. You know, tell a story, you know, shoot what's on the script and that's it. So there's not really many sort of action directors in America that have the ability to go, no, I need more time. But in Hong Kong, they do that. Jackie Chan, you know, will go, no, you know, we're going to spend $5 million more and another month to complete this action scene because I'm not happy with it. That doesn't happen in America. And that's why the movies over there, the action is so great.
Cool, that's fantastic, yeah.
So what does the future hold for you then, Darren? And could we talk you into reading our script and teaming you up with Gary Daniels?
Yeah, well, I said before, I mean, I'd love to work with Gary again. You know, I knew this producer years ago, and we kept talking about, let's try to do something again, you know, me and Gary. And, you know, I think I'm doing something with Scott probably pretty soon. You know, there's a few things. I mean, I'm up for a few, you know, TV shows and stuff like that. I mean, I think the important thing as an actor is just to keep working. You know, a good friend of mine, Russell Friedenberg, who I worked with on that movie Legion of the Dead, he said, listen, dude, actors act. You know, don't try to be too picky. You know, just keep working, you know, on all different films, TV, different formats. You know, we did Mortal Kombat, you know, as a web series. You know, It Man 2 as a movie. You do videos, you do TV, you know, just keep working. Just the important thing is the material, you know.
Yeah.
Just the material and keep working with great people. You know, and a lot of those movies that I did, you know, the fight scenes didn't end up, you know, really good because, you know, I want to work with people like Larnell Stovall, you know, as a fight choreographer, you know, J.J. Perry, these kind of guys that really know action and how to shoot fight scenes. And I did a lot of those movies where, you know, I was trying to choreograph. They didn't have a fight choreographer. I was choreographing stuff myself. They didn't even have money to bring even stunt performers in, you know. So the important thing is just to keep doing movies that, number one, that people are going to see, but also that challenge you as an actor, you know. I just try to find, you know, stuff that's good acting roles, you know?
Yeah.
And play different characters.
It's nice as well that you want to be doing the action films as well.
Well, while I still can, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, you know, I do as much action movies as I can. I mean, I still work out 3 hours a day. I mean, what the hell am I doing it for if not for, you know, it's nice getting hired on a film or a TV show where you don't have to throw a kick or a punch, but I enjoy doing action. It's what got me into it.
Yeah, well, the last couple I saw, the package and Tactical Force, I thought they were, because I watched a few of yours in the lead up to doing the interview, and I just thought they were terrific. I mean, the package especially, you know, I sung its praises online.
Yeah, the package was good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about two completely different directors there. I mean, you know, Tactical Force was just, you know, you got Steve Austin and Michael Jai White, and they, logistically, it was a bit of a nightmare shooting the movie. You know, there were a lot of issues, and the script, I mean, it was okay, you know, but they kind of changed a lot of things, and the director wasn't really open to sort of any kind of collaboration, and you know, he wanted to, you know what I mean, that Michael Eklund's character, you know, when he gets shot in the head, and then all of a sudden you see him later on, and he returns, and he's alive, you know, yeah, after being clearly shot in the head with his brains blown back out of his head,
yeah,
because they didn't know how to finish the movie, and the running time was too short, so the director got this great idea, well, hey, you know what, we'll bring him back. well, you've already seen him get his head blown off, you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't make sense. And they, you know, so you're short on the running time. Well, let's come up with some other ideas, maybe flesh out some of the other characters. But he didn't give a fuck about wanting anybody else, anybody else's opinion, you know? I think it was just, you know, just very rushed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I got
the package, on the other hand,
right.
You've got Jesse Johnson. So you've got a real filmmaker there who's really, you know, from the beginning, you get the genesis, you get the script, you know, and he wants to sort of, you know, change the script and do some rewrites that are going to work for him and his style of directing. And there's nothing superfluous about the way Jesse Johnson makes a movie, you know? I mean, he wants to tell a story and make a great action movie. And, you know, his movies aren't, although they're all action, they're great movies. They're crime thrillers, they're noir, they're drama, you know? And he's telling a story. I mean, he's really a director who, you know, his heart's really there. And he's a real connoisseur of movies. I mean, he's a real fan of everything from Japanese cinema, you know, Kurosawa way back. I mean, he's guy's like a film historian, you know?
Yeah.
So you know that when you're in his hands, you know, you've got a director there that you can trust, and he's going to, you know, get great performances, but also really get a great film together, you know. And the package was just a really wonderful film to work on. You know, Steve Austin and I, we didn't have any scenes in Tactical Force. So for me to get with him, you know, working with him on the package again, you know, with Jesse was fantastic. Yeah, I was really happy with that.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, I'd seen him in The Expendables, but I can't say that I necessarily dipped too much into, like, because I was so much going through 80s and 90s action stuff for the show, I hadn't dipped much into the, apart from Expendables and Die Hards and things like that, the later stuff. And, yeah, seeing him in Tactical Force, while I agree, you know, the direction is not great and the script is all over the place, but he is very charismatic in that film.
Yeah, yes,
and Michael Jai White is very charismatic and you're excellent in that film. The performances are really quite good. The editing, that swish pan editing thing, let that movie down, but
stupid. It was ridiculous. And the other thing is, you know, and we had Lara Chartrand on there as a stunt coordinator on choreographing the fights, and we had this great fight scene with me and Mike.
Yeah.
And, you know, what the director does is, you know, you choreograph this fight. And every fight, we're trying to tell a story. You know, we're trying to show two different characters. It's yin and yang. It's back and forth. It's, you know, it's cat and mouse, you know.
Yeah.
So we choreograph this really great little fight scene. And, you know, as soon as you get, you know, to a point where it looks really good, you swish pan away to the director's wife, you know, shooting her guns out of the back of a truck. It's like, come on, guys. You know, we have to keep... What is this, you know, ADD kind of filmmaking, you know?
I completely agree.
It's like watching a porn movie, right? And then, you know, just when you get into the good bit and you cut away to something else. I mean, you know, this is, you know, you're doing a fight scene. Let's at least just, you know, it's short enough as it is.
Yeah.
You know, just cutting away to something else and coming back to give the illusion that we were still fighting.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me on certain in a movie like that. You know,
it's funny because I watched the package straight after, and I put something up on our Facebook about the trouble with these B movie action stuff at the moment is this, you know, like you said, ADD directing, and you know, and I said it's such a shame because there's clearly great performances, there's clearly good scripts out there, there's clearly like people coming to work to do the stuff, but it's not being serviced by these editors and these directors. And then I sat down and watched the package, and I was just blown away. I was just like, this is the stuff. This is this is where it's at. It's a slower take on the stuff. Dolph Lundgren is incredible in it, deep and inward thinking. Yeah, just really good. You know, your performance is fantastic, Austin is just, again, thoughtful and showing like a slightly emotional side to him. It's it's great.
Well, and in there you have Jesse's direction, because I would see Jesse sort of lean over to Steve and just give a little hint, you know, a little try this, try that, you know. I mean, he's not a director that would go, okay, Steve, let's, you know, the problem with Steve and the earlier movies that he did, he worked with directors that are just like, he's a fucking wrestler, you know, just they don't take him seriously as an actor. Yeah. And Jesse does. Jesse takes, you know, if he's working with a Steve Austin, whoever it is, he looks at the he looks at Steve Austin as an actor, and he treats him that way and with respect, and he gets a really good nuanced performance from him. You know, and I would see Jesse just walk up to Steve and just whisper something in his ear, try this, and Steve would do it. And that's what Steve sort of needed, was somebody who would, you know, treat him as not this sort of you know, this character that he's played for so many years, stone cold, but treat him as Steve Austin, an actor, you know, who's playing a character.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about Jesse, is he knows how to get really good performances out of people.
Yeah, definitely. And that came across. That completely came across.
Yeah. And I think they're doing another movie. I hope they do, because, you know, I mean, I think it's the best movie Steve's done. You know, it's, I think that, they make a good team, those two, Jesse and Steve. I think they're doing another one. I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. I've got to check out Hunt to Kill with him and Gary Daniels. I haven't seen that yet.
Right. Yeah.
Because they did that straight after The Expendables. So I was intrigued that sort of him and Eric Roberts and Gary Daniels, having been that little threesome in The Expendables, then went off and did a movie together. I think that's going to be fun to watch that.
Yeah, I saw that. My friends made that movie. That was Keone Waxman directed it, and Laura Chartrand was, I think Laro did that, or James Bamford and Melissa Stubbs were doing the action on that. And Gary choreographed that fight with him and Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, that turned out good. And Michael Eklund is in that movie as well, who was in Tactical Force. And he plays the bad guy in the movie The Call with Halle Berry, and he's a fantastic actor. He's not an action guy, but he's, you know, what Keone did with Hunt to Kill, which put some really good actors in there as well.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, no, I can't wait to check that out. Have you seen that, Doc?
I've got that. I've not got around to watching it yet, but I will do, definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of a First Blood type picture, you know?
I've seen bits of it. I've seen bits, but I've not watched it all the way, so I bust it down and watch it.
And that's a good thing that a lot of these guys do, is you surround someone like Steve Austin with some really good actors, and it brings up everybody's performance, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So can we see you in... Because every Expendables has had a British guy...
Yeah,
opposite Jason Statham.
I've already thought about that, mate.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I don't even know that they audition for that. You've got to be offered it. You know, Stallone has to get your, you know, you've got to get his attention. So I don't really know how to do that right now. But, I mean, yeah, trust me, I thought, well, look, you got Gary Daniels at number one, Scott Adkins at number two, Darren Shalhoub at number three. Oh, did I say that?
Yeah, exactly. No, we think the same way, dude. We think the same way.
I wish. I don't know what's going on with that, you know. Yeah. I mean, they've just hired the director, and for me, you know, I'll find out, who the stunt coordinator is, who the fight choreographer is. And I get a lot of work because the stunt coordinator convinces the director and producers, look, if you hire Darren Shalhoub, he can act okay, he can do the fights, you know what I mean? And I get a lot of work through those guys. Lauren L. Stovall, you know, he got me on Mortal Kombat, you know. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But that's certainly... sort of top of my list is Expendables 3, but, you know, I don't know how I'm going to go in a movie like that.
Well, you should be there, so I'm telling you that now.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'd do anything on that movie. I'd open a door for any of those guys.
Well, thanks ever so much, though, Darren, for doing this interview. That's fantastic, and I'll put it all together, and I'll send you the link on Twitter for when it goes up. But thank you for doing it. It's great for a show like ours to... get to speak to someone like you, and I hope it's been okay.
No, fantastic. Thanks for asking me, John and Paul. Thoughts or action? Kick-ass kid. Yes. If you have any other questions, just give me a shout, and you know, hopefully I do some cool stuff in the next little while, and we can have another chat.
Definitely, okay. Definitely. Yeah, down the road.
Thank you for your time. It's been fantastic.
No problem, yeah.
I'm Steven Seagal. That's right, Steven Seagal. And for the past 40 years, in between barbecuing oxen and roasting boar for my insatiable appetite, I never miss an episode of Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. Ain't that right, Johnny?
Hi, I'm Dr. Action.
Hi, and I'm the Kick-Ass Kid.
When I'm not watching action films, I'm usually polishing my gun while looking at a bat.
And when I'm not watching action films, I'm normally outside with a harpoon killing puppies.
But usually you can find us both watching 80s, 90s action films. You could follow us on Twitter, Dr. Action Kick-Ass.
You can find us on our main page, which is dractionkickass.blogspot.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and TalkShoe.
Yes, every week we do a commentary on an 80s and 90s action classic, and where we can, we also provide the film so that you can watch along with it.
This podcast explodes.
Hey, where's that baby mama at? I gotta tase somebody.
There are men, and then there are second unit podcast men. The podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms, from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today, and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?